You're listening to the Screening in Kingston podcast. For more on Screening in Kingston, more episodes, info about our movie clubs, and a lot more fun movie content, visit screeninginkingston.com. We're back, the Screening in Kingston podcast. We've got really nothing going on in the movie world, Taylor, because not only were a lot of movies supposed to open in these coming weeks here, because they all got ended up getting pushed back because of the strike, but also, you know how sometimes one or two movies, when they open, like kind of eat up the entire stratosphere of like conversation about movies?
Yeah.
That I think is happening, where there's like a movie or two that people are talking about a lot, and then there's a lot that's flying under the radar.
So I know you went to see and reviewed one of those movies that is taking up all the airspace. What other movie is big this past week, or are you just referring to Civil War?
So Civil War is the main one, but also this Omen movie is getting a lot of buzz on the positive side, where people are like, the first Omen is like incredible. Apparently it's really good, really scary, like a really, really solid horror movie.
Are they considering this a reboot, or are they considering this a prequel?
It's one of those like soft reboot slash prequels where it's like, okay, we're going backwards from the Omen movie, but I guess the connections aren't like forced. It's just like we're going back and we're sort of seeing some origin aspect, but it has a lot of apparently like a new flavor to it. One of those spiritual reboots, right, whatever they call them. Yeah.
And the idea is that if this does well, it will probably then like
spawn many more Omen.
Got it. I think it'll become a franchise, or it's part of the franchise. That's right.
I had read somewhere that in the horror sort of area, there's a lot of discussion about, okay, what's the next sort of like series going to be? Because Insidious is like wrapped up, or is wrapping up. And they don't really know how many more of the Conjuring universe movies there's going to be. So I think there's this want to start another like franchise of horror films.
But make a new one then. And don't, you know, Omen is old IP. I'll bite my tongue, because if it's good, then like whatever, go for it. I'm less of a stickler when it comes to horror reimaginings. I don't know what it is. I guess because it's a genre that you can play with so much. So I don't like, oh, we're going to reboot Carrie, which they did, but I think it was dismal. I don't think it went very well. But angry is not the right word, but I think I have a little bit more grace towards the horror genre. I'm like, yeah, give it a stab. Why not? Try again. Let's see where it can go. So that will be interesting. The thing about The Conjuring, I did many moons ago now, Mike, see a headline that was saying that The Last Rite, which I think is the name of the next one, is going to be the last movie.
So I believe it's the last Conjuring film, but there's still plans for one or two more spin-off ones of that. Yeah.
Like there could be another nun.
Yes, there might be another nun, and you might see like Ed and Lorraine pop up again here and there.
But more cameos.
That's right. Yeah, like they're here or they're called at the end or whatever. Like it's more that kind of thing. Like from what it sounds like, they're not done in terms of their story, but they're like the Conjuring films themselves will wrap up. Ed and Lorraine will still.
Because they have so many of their files.
That's right.
They've had, if you believe that they did what they actually did, there's so many cases. It's like the Conjuring universe never has to end, really, based on the case files. You could dip into the lesser known ones. One other thing I want to mention, I'm going to backtrack and talk about The Omen one more time. Mm-hmm. Nicole sent me a text. Nicole, a friend of Taylor, friend of the show, TIFF correspondent Nicole, sent me a picture. They had gone to go see, her and Missy, her partner, had gone to go see Immaculate, the movie that you reviewed, what, 2 weeks ago now? Two or three weeks ago?
Yeah.
And there was a full-on confessional booth in the movie theater promoting The Omen. So I don't know. Yes.
No.
In the theater they were in, and it was quite,
no,
you know, like, I was like, oh, bold marketing choice. It looked life size, and Nicole made it seem like you could, like, sit in it. So for our fans who are not familiar, I think even if you're not Catholic or religious, people have seen enough movies to know what a confessional booth is. But for those not in the know, it's the little booth that, you know, you walk in on one side, the Catholic priest walks in the other side. Typically, there's a screen between you, and it's where you go to confess your sins, right? So I'm sure people have seen it in movies and TV.
Yeah.
Well, they've used this, the whole booth, to, I thought, what kind of budget does this marketing team have that, and how many movie theaters is there a full-on confessional booth? So based on this marketing, you'd hope that the movie's doing well. And you're saying it is. You're saying that it's getting good reviews.
It's definitely doing well at the box office. What's funny is I saw a preview recently for a movie with almost the exact same plot as Immaculate. And I thought to myself, wait, didn't I just see this? Like, it just seems like it's the same movie.
The week before you went to review Immaculate, I'm pretty sure I brought this up on air, or maybe we had this conversation off air. Did I not tell you that I saw a commercial for a nun that gets pregnant?
Oh, you did.
And yes. I said, is this Immaculate, or did I see a different trailer? And you said, I don't know. I think your answer was you didn't know. But
didn't
you
know.
Must have seen the trailer that I saw.
There's another one. Yes, there's another one. There's another nun
pregnant
related nun. Pregnant movie that is horror based that is coming out soon. And I saw, don't know the name. I just don't know.
Did you see the trailer when you went to go see Immaculate, or did you just
Civil War?
That's interesting. Well, I guess Civil War is being marketed as kind of like a post-apocalyptic.
They had a
thriller.
Mix of types of trailers. Yeah, it was. There was a lot of drama trailers and a lot of horror.
Right.
I just got to say the other thing. Well, actually, hold on. Train of thought, because you just reminded me of something else. Was it you who told me about the movie Late Night with the Devil?
Yes, I did bring that
up. Okay,
you
did bring that up.
Okay. So bad. It's at the screening room right now.
Yes, it's at the screening room. Go to the screening room and check it out. I'm desperately trying to watch this movie. No theater near me is currently playing it. But I had seen a trailer for it. And during the trail, I'm like, someone described this movie to me. And I thought it must have been you during our entire talk, but I wasn't sure. And I kept forgetting to ask you. But
doesn't it look good?
It looks fantastic. Like, really,
it looks really great.
It looks exactly what you want out of a horror movie. And I really love that the aspect of kind of a late night talk show looking like it's filmed just like you would go to a late night talk show. To see just the, like, and something goes wrong. I like those types of premises where something's happening and then something goes wrong. Like that movie about the guy who was pretending to do exorcisms.
And The Last Exorcism.
The Last Exorcism. Yeah. And then great suddenly movie. he has to deal with the real one. Fantastic.
He's been, faking them the whole time. Yeah. And then his very last run up for his career.
Yeah.
Is
really funny yeah. movie up until a point when the real thing happens. Like, I love that where you're like, we're okay. And then we're going to twisted on its head.
And I think Late Night with the Devil, and shout out to Nicole, because Nicole's the one who put this movie on my radar. Typically, she's the one who's giving me my little teasers for what's coming out. It's, as far as I can tell, it is supposed to be a horror comedy. Like, I think there is going to be comedic elements to it, which is great. It is it's an IFC and Shudder co-production. So Shudder is the streaming service just for horror content. Mm. I don't know. I'm sure probably 1% of our listeners has Shudder. It's a very niche. You can't get more niche in terms of your streaming services than that. But anyways, this movie is going to be on Shudder. And I don't know what the subscription fee is for that. But I'm almost, if I can't rent it, like, if it doesn't go to YouTube or Amazon Prime to rent, I might very well subscribe to Shudder and then watch the movie and cancel my subscription.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it's really worth watching, like, it's just in terms of horror movies. And it's so interesting that there's almost two horror seasons now. You've got spring and you've got like the fall. Haven't you noticed that? Like over the past couple of years, you get 3 or 4 horror movies now, and yeah. then 3 or 4. You usually get the one in the summer, which I think is this Nun movie.
Bad,
and
yeah, then, bad marketing.
Yeah, and then you get a couple in September, October. Like it just seems like we have 2 prime times now for horror movies.
I think I definitely saw that weird vampire movie, which I completely forget the name.
Abigail? No, something like that, isn't it? Is it the one with the? No, wait. What weird vampire
she movie? Gets lured. This was probably almost 3 years ago now,
because oh, this is already before, come out. Okay,
it was
okay.
Before George
there's a new one
right, yeah, it's a baby. It's like a child. It's vampire. A child
that gets kidnapped Abigail. With their vampire. Yep. yes
but okay. The weird vampire movie I saw, completely forget the name of it, the one where she's lured to England under the auspice that she's meeting her extended family. It's probably not ringing any bells. It was a pretty forgettable movie. I'm pretty sure that came out. That was like a summer movie. I vaguely remember that it was not fall. It was. So I don't know. I don't get movie marketing. But hey, I like a horror movie. I'll take one in the spring. Why not? But August. We've talked about this a million times on the show. Yeah. I don't. August is not a good time to be releasing any you kind of horror movie. Always get the
one or two that ends up getting released. Like whenever in August, like it always seems to happen. You get a late July or early August movie, and I'm not in the mood.
I'm not. Yeah. Here's one other trailer thing for you, Mike. And my internet sleuthing failed me on this one. Did you see? There must have been some sort of media convention, like a studio convention a couple weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago now, 3 by the time this is airing. And it wasn't like a Comic-Con, but it was something similar along those lines. And studios were previewing their trailers. And Robert Eggers, that's his name, right? The director of The Witch. I always forget his name. Eggers. Robert Eggers. His Nosferatu was teased. And so based on the article Variety reported on it, I thought, okay, I'll watch the trailer. I could not find it on YouTube. So that's weird. Normally when trailers debut at those sort of conferences or whatever, the next day they're on YouTube.
Yeah, now that is the procedure. They pretty much upload them online.
Have you heard anything about this? Have you seen the headlines? So you haven't seen the trailer for it either. Okay.
No, I haven't. No.
I'm dying to see it.
I didn't know they had a trailer ready. Like I thought that movie was still far away.
But let me do a very quick Nosferatu 2024.
This is always good
on air. Yeah, when I December here's an interesting release date, Mike. December 25th, 2024. Christmas.
That's a little odd to me that you would do a Christmas.
That's the Canadian release date. That's what Google's telling me. Release date, December 25th, 2024. That is a wild release date. A vampire movie on Christmas.
I'm surprised just because of the property. Why wouldn't you make sure that came out like the weekend of Halloween or a couple weeks before? I understand the lead up when you're like, okay, we want the lead up to Halloween. We don't want to open Halloween weekend because we know that weekend will be big. So we'll open a couple weeks before, get the big push, and then build some momentum. I understand that. But I don't want to, like, December's like, why? The types of movies people want to go see is generally not that on Christmas.
No.
Like it would be like,
it's not Wonka. Even a, it's not a, yeah, it's not a family movie.
No.
Like, you know, Christmas, and I don't mean it's a weird movie because like it's not like Christmas themes. It's normally on people who are going to movies on Christmas are typically families, and so you need a movie with broad appeal, kind of big, like a popcorn movie. Mm-hmm. And this is not that, especially because Robert Eggers is not a popcorn director.
No, and I'm just, yeah, I mean, and again, sometimes they do like, okay, we're going to, you know, counter programming. We're going to make sure we have this up against whatever. But still, I find that to be very, very odd that that is what you'd pick for your release date. Like, that to me doesn't, that does not compute. That doesn't make sense.
I'm dying to see it, but I don't think I'll be going on December 25th to see it.
No, that would not Christmas be my Day. Christmas movie this year. No, that will not be it. Yeah, I mean, it's it is interesting when they decide to release these kinds of movies. But
who makes that decision? The studio or producers or what?
Studios. They're the ones who have the release. They build their schedule. Often you see movies get pushed and moved and stuff because of certain competitive movies. They want to kind of stay away from certain types of films and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it's all studio decisions. They make those calls. They decide whether or not to open a movie, when to do it, when not to. Yeah, it's all studio
driven. They're really going for like the goth demographic, because who else is gonna go?
Who's
gonna go see that on Christmas? And do they not, like, you want your movie to perform well at opening.
Opening weekend is, for a movie, is really the thing. Like, that's what you want. You need a big opening weekend, and then everything else from there always trails off. Movies always, like, it's every week's less and less and less. It's really, like, the opposite of what you see in, like, stage theater, which is the opposite. Like, your first week's usually okay or whatever, but you want to build. You want to build your audience over time. You want word of mouth. With movies, it's kind of the opposite. You want to open big, and then it's going to trail off anyway. You just want that trail off to be as low as possible. You want your drops to not be too bad. So yeah, you want everyone coming Christmas Eve, Christmas Day to see this movie.
That is just it absolutely bananas. Of all the weird things that the studios have been doing in the past, like since the pandemic, this is up there. This is up there with marketing musicals without the music.
Yeah, which is a continued trend with everything we're seeing with Wicked and the new Joker movie. I can't believe those two are in the same sentence, but they are. And yeah, no, the marketing decision's very crazy. We've got a couple quick fan follow-ups, Taylor.
Ooh, yes, please hit me with them.
To our discussion last week.
First, it, boy, comes girl. From...
Yeah, like, first comes from the aforementioned Nicole, who wanted to add someone to their list.
Got it.
So making now the total 7.
Seems like seems like cheating, but she is my best friend, so.
It was also all in caps, so I felt like we had to read it.
She was yelling it at you.
Yeah. So it says, "Hi, I'd like to add Pete Davidson to the It People list. Thank you very much." All one word. Nicole.
I buy that one. I do not like him. He just gives me the...
Yeah, he rubs me the wrong way. He's... I don't really get... I don't really get him.
Neither do I.
General, don't think. Now, with that being said, when he's acting... Like, I've seen him do a few things and obviously saw him on SNL. And when he's acting and playing a role, he has some abilities there. It's not like he can't do those things. But, like, just his... own humor and his stuff, I don't really get.
This is how I know he's an it boy. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything, including SNL, but I'm very aware of his persona and his personal life, and I've seen stills of his SNL sketches. I know who he's dating. I know what he looks like. So that's how I know he qualifies as an it boy, because I have literally seen him in nothing and I hate him. So there you go. It boy.
That tells you something right there. Okay. Another follow-up here. This one's from Amy. So Amy says, "I really thought the discussion about it people and Hollywood stars was actually quite funny. It's really interesting to me because I never really thought about them as being two different things, but the way it was explained, it makes total sense." All capitals. "There are certain people that you think about."
Our fans are getting very expressive.
Very expressive. There are certain people you think about, but not necessarily for them being strong performer or wanting to see their performance. You just go and see the movie. And again, all caps, I can't believe I never thought of it this way before, because I definitely agree that they seem to be in two different categories. So we're really, thank you.
Thank you, Amy. We're widening people's horizons.
And I still think it would be interesting now to do the third category we talked about of, like, it's what are the five just best actors. Who are the five best actors working right now? Like, if you had to nominate your five nominees for best actor, like, currently, who would they be? Like, that to me is kind of the other category that we didn't tackle. Because again, I feel like that's a whole new list of a new.
Yeah, movie. Agreed. Because that's like, where do the Joaquin Phoenixes and the you know.
Joaquin, and everyone Joaquin else. Phoenix, huh? Just
that's, yeah. that's my list. Joaquin Phoenix.
You'd have to think on that one a bit, I guess. But yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like, they belong on this other list of just, you know, the performances are going to be really good. They've got the gravitas. They've got the ability. Which again, I think can be different from being a Hollywood star.
Agreed.
So, this is an interesting question here. So this one comes from Carly, who says, I'm really interested to know, when you're selecting a movie to watch, have you ever been in a situation where you've watched the movie, you finished it, and thought, there's no way I can review this? Generally, I would be thinking for negative reasons, but I guess you could quickly review it if you really, really enjoyed it and don't have much to say. But I'm more thinking on the negative side. Have you ever seen yourself in that situation where you just sat down and said, there is nothing I can talk about this movie, I have to watch something else?
I feel like we get every, maybe once a year, we get this question in some sort of incarnation. Like, how do we select our movies? What happens when there's not a movie you want to see? And my answer is always the same. We review everything. We pretty much see everything. I will say, no, I think I have reviewed everything that I've sat down, Mike, where I'm like, this is for the show. Whether it be going to the theater or watching it on Netflix. If I've committed that movie going experience to the show, I will review it. And I don't think there was ever a time I haven't. The only time where I might say, oh, this isn't worth the content, is if I've watched something on the side, so to speak. And because there's plenty of things we watch that don't end up in on the podcast that yes. we're just like watching personally.
Of course. Yeah.
But no, I don't think I've ever skipped, because at the very least, we give a quick plot synopsis and we say, like, why this movie's trash. I wonder if this question came up because of the Rookie Stanicky. Like, that was very, I was very close last week to turning off Rookie Stanicky, but I was still going to talk about it on the show if I turned it off.
Yeah, I feel like maybe this question does come from that discussion, because, yeah, that you definitely were not saying positive things
no
about it. It's interesting to me that I can remember one time, but I'm having a hard time remembering what the movie is, because there was one time that I do remember watching a movie and thinking, I don't think I have enough to say, I'm gonna watch something else and review two movies. But I think I might have done, the context was, yeah,
I might have done that as well. But there, I think we always at the very least mention it on the show. Like, yes, we watched this and it was a dud, so we watched something else. But we always, I don't think there's ever been a time where I'm like, nope, that's not making it into the show. And also, like, when you've done a show for this many years on a weekly basis, you need the content. You know what I mean? Like, we can't really afford to not review right. the things we watch. Would you agree, Mike? Or am I just being a little bit...
No.
Curmudgeon-y. I think
no. I agree. When we sit, certainly when I sit down and I'm like, okay, I'm committing the time to this, I generally think, okay, I've got to find something to say.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm committing the time and I'm doing this, what have you. But there's definitely instances where I felt I need to watch something else for whatever reason that I need to find something else. And some weeks, I think we've talked about this before, some weeks it's harder than others. Some weeks it's really easy because you go to a movie, you're going to review it and it's fine. And then other weeks it's like, okay, you're struggling to find something. And then you start watching it and you're like, I don't know.
It was a schlog. Once in a blue moon, I might not find anything, especially now being home with the baby, who I guess I should stop calling him a baby. He's pretty much a toddler now. But I'm really kind of tethered to streaming. And there are some weeks where I'm like, there's literally nothing. Like, there's nothing that I can watch. I'm sure I could put on like a horrible made for Netflix movie, but I think that happens very occasionally. Like maybe once every 6 months, I can't find something to watch. Maybe even less than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We've got a couple movies to review.
Speaking of.
So you watched Scoop. And I watched Civil War. And to be clear, the Scoop you watched is not the Hugh Jackman and
Woody Harrelson movie, or
Woody
Allen, not Scarlett Johansson.
You watched a new Scoop, a Netflix Scoop. Yeah.
I thought it was a stupid name, but again, I think most movie names are stupid these days. I think I've complained about this frequently, but these kind of like one word snappy titles that they've been doing recently, I'm not for it. Especially because there is a movie called Scoop before. I sat down and watched. To the point where, Mike, I at first was going to skip over this movie because I thought this was an old movie. I'm like, Scoop? And then I checked my, I think it must have been my Netflix, you know how Netflix sends you emails about new releases? Every once in a while, I'll check that. I don't check it religiously. And I think Scoop was like, oh, new release, 2024, Scoop. And I'm like, what? So I too was confused. No, this is a new movie. It's made for Netflix and it stars Gillian Anderson and Billy Piper are the most recognizable. And then Rufus Sewell. He has a very recognizable face. He's a character actor.
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, very recognizable face. Anyway, so that's the movie I reviewed. Do you want me to jump right in or do you want to do your review?
Why don't you dive right in? I mean, the one thing I just wanted to say about the title is it used to be, maybe things have changed, but it used to be that you couldn't have two movies with the same name. Like many movies have had to change their names in the past because as they're registering their movie, they have to change it somehow. So I guess that doesn't matter anymore.
But maybe the Scoop movie we're thinking of, I think it might have an explanation point at the end. But I could be imagining that.
Oh, so maybe it's like, oh, because that would be enough.
I think I could be imagining that. But I'm pretty sure it's like Scoop, but maybe not. I don't know. Anyways.
Do we know what the first Scoop movie is about? Like the one
with Scarlett Johansson? Isn't he like an investigative? I've seen it, and I remember Scarlett Johansson in a bathing suit, and that's about it. When you said that Hugh Jackman was in that movie, completely forgot. I want to say it's about a detective, but I could be wrong. Do you remember what it's about?
No. I don't even think I've watched it. Like I don't.
2006. Let's very, very, very quickly. This is not what? Romantic. Okay, Scoop is a 2006 romantic crime comedy written and directed by Woody Allen and starring Hugh Jackman, Scarlett Johansson, Ian McShane, and Allen himself. The film follows an American journalist and a magician. I remember there being cards. Being guided by the spirit of a reporter to investigate a British aristocrat who might be a serial killer. I don't remember any of that. I remember this poster. but anyways, so interestingly, this movie is also about journalists because that's what Scoop means. It's like an investigative.
That I assumed. Scoop. I assumed it was about journalism as well.
So this is a... Prior to recording, I was thinking, like, does this movie have widespread appeal? And probably, but why I'm apprehensive, I'll explain. This is a movie that's about a huge journalistic story at the BBC covering, people might remember this, and I want to say it's back in possibly 2019. Yes. So there's this huge television interview of Prince Andrew, who's a brother of our king, King Charles. Mm-hmm. So Prince Andrew had a murky, unclear relationship with Epstein, who you know, died, committed suicide, whatever. Mm-hmm. I say whatever because some people, anyways, well, I don't want to get into it, but
it's a whole thing.
Yeah. People have lots of theories, lots of conspiracy theories. So for those who don't know, Epstein was this financier. He dies before he can go on trial for sex trafficking. So Prince Andrew has had this ongoing relationship with him until about 2010. And there's speculation that, or I should say, he's openly been accused of, you know, having a relationship with one of these trafficked girls. So the scoop in this movie is about, will the BBC or one of the shows on the BBC, will they be able to get the interview with Prince Andrew? So in real life, people may remember that there was this big interview in 2019. It was memed to death. It's the interview where Prince Andrew says he doesn't sweat, and that's why he's innocent. And so the movie is describe it as a biographical movie about how the team on the show goes about getting this interview. So Billy Piper, who a lot of people know her from Doctor Who, she was also on a show called, I think, Confessions of a Call Girl or something of a similar name like that. That's what I know her from. Popular British actress. She plays the booking agent for this BBC show. And then Gillian Anderson plays the journalist that does the interview on the BBC show. And Rufus Sewell in very, very, very good prosthetics plays Prince Andrew. Like, you have to, if you squint, you think that's Prince Andrew in the in the movie. Really? So why I thought, would this story have wide appeal? I personally am not really drawn to these biographical movies about news agencies, especially when it's like it's a movie about the true events that lead to the journalists,
right,
revealing the story, however you want to describe that. Like, you're following, like, the main characters of the movie are the journalists, and they're, you know, they're dogged investigators and whatever. Personally, that doesn't appeal to me. I can just read the expose that's in the newspaper or the magazine, or I can, you know what I mean?
That's enough for you.
That's enough. Like, I don't need to know the behind the scenes of how they did the story. That's the, that movie about that. I'm having a hard time remembering things today, but what's new? Mike, help me out. It was a Netflix short series about that scam artist and Anna. I think it's called Inventing Anna.
I think it's Inventing Anna, yes.
And it's the same premise. It's like you're following the journalist, like building a relationship with her in order to get the big story. I think I turned it off after the second interview or the second episode. I just couldn't get into it. I'm like, I have read the expose. I know what happens. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All that to be said, I think this movie does have appeal. It's a very well-crafted movie. It was very riveting. They filmed it almost like a thriller. The tension felt very high. Like, are they going to get this interview? Is he going to confess to these things? What's going to happen? Like, will the royal family allow it? Are they going to, you know what I mean? So that was very good. The acting was really great. All the leads, I thought, were really phenomenal, including Rufus Sewell. It's always, especially when you're acting in that much makeup, it's always, you're like, okay, is this going to be a swing or a miss? Like when you put, you know what I mean? When you put an actor in all that makeup and they're playing a real person, you're kind of like,
yeah,
where's this going to go? It was very good. And I think with this being a story about Epstein and about which, you know, people continue to be fascinated by that. People who are interested in the royal family will probably be interested in this movie. I think it was quite good. To the point, Mike, where I said, is this my first seed of the year? But then I felt, but Mike, exactly that. Because last week we discussed how I have not, you as well, we have not had a single see it. And nope. So I'm like, oh my goodness, is this movie see it worthy? Does this deserve to be the first see it of the year? I will say, in just in terms of story, you know, like from start to finish, the movie was quite riveting. It's under 2 hours. It's about, it's 103 minutes. So about, I think that works out to be about an hour 40. The performances were great. You know, not such high anxiety that like you're uncomfortable watching it, but just enough tension that you're excited to see mm-hmm. what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. My one critique of the movie is that I felt, and this might be also why I'm a little bit biased towards journalism movies, I 100% respect our journalists. I think especially journalists who do sort of exposés or investigative journalism, I have a lot of respect for. But sometimes I feel like these journalism movies are like rah, rah journalism. See, this is why we're an important industry and we can't die. And it's just like, it's a little heavy-handed for me, Mike. I'm like, we know that news media is dying. We know that's sucky. We know that it's not great for democracy. I don't need to. The literally like the last line in the movie was like, the work we do is so important. It was just like such a cliche, knock me over the head, like rah-rah journalism that I'm like, ooh, that was cringe. It just came off as inauthentic to me. So that's my one critique, is that I felt like the end of the movie was a little bit just, it was a little bit on the nose, a little bit too cutesy for me. But overall, definitely worth a watch. Like, is this Oscar material? Probably not. But like, I'm thinking like, would I have enjoyed seeing this in the theater, and would it have felt worth it? Yeah, I think this would be a fine movie to see in theaters. It's a Netflix movie, so you don't need to wait to see it in theaters. You can go watch it now. It came out April 5th, so very new still. And yeah, go ahead and check it out. People are always surprised to learn that Gillian Anderson is not British, because no, they forget she's that she's not in the X-Files.
Yeah. Sorry, did I miss it? Did you give it a see it or a stream?
Yeah, no, it's a see it. It's a see it.
Wow.
Let's not make a big deal of it, because I might regret it at the end of the year, depending on the
right. So it's
see it list.
You would say it's kind of a borderline.
Well, here's the thing, Mike. Like, do we have to revisit what we mean by see it? Like, to me, a see it is just a good enough movie that if you saw this in theaters, it was worth the money for the ticket and the popcorn. To me, that's this movie. Like, is it going to win any awards? I don't know. Like, too soon to say. The fact that it was released on Netflix at this time of the year, I don't think it's an award contender. But I definitely thought that the story was riveting enough and the acting was good enough that this is a movie worth checking out. But, you know, the caveat being it is sort of a biographical. So, like, if you've been following the story, you're probably not going to learn much of anything new, if that makes sense. But still worth it. Like, I enjoyed it. The hour and 40 minutes flew by while I was watching.
Yeah, and I do think that's exactly right. Like, they don't have to necessarily be the award-winning movie, but we're saying, you know, if you have a chance to see it or watch it, it's kind of like giving it a recommendation. And you can add the caveat of, well, okay, some people will like it because this is, some will not, what have you. But yeah, basically, you're saying enough that I'd be like, oh, maybe I'll watch this and I won't be like disappointed to sit down and turn it on.
That's exactly.
Yeah. Okay, cool. There you go. first see it of the year is Scoop. So my movie, Civil War, to pull an old screening in Kingston thing, also Tyler Vance thing of connections, how you form connections. My movie, Civil War, is also about journalism.
But not real life. Like, this is it. I should say,
it's not biographical. This is fiction. This is fiction. But I will say, this movie is not about the inner workings of a civil war in the United States.
Okay.
This movie is about journalism during wartime and what they have to go through to get the proper shots, to tell the story they want, to try to figure out how to get moments and figure out what's happening. That's what this movie's about.
See, to me, that seems boring. You've already lost me, but go on.
Well, I'll explain. Basically, the premise of the movie is this is fictional. There's a fictional civil war that is happening in the United States, kind of in our immediate future. And a group of journalists, including a photojournalist who's played by Kirsten Dunst, and kind of her writing partner, who writes all the stuff and she gets the pictures. They want to travel from New York City down to Washington, D.C. because the forces that have sort of left the U.S., they're marching up to the Capitol, and there is the sense that the war is coming to some kind of a conclusion. So right. They need to be there. And basically, a young, aspiring photojournalist joins them, and an older journalist who knows both of them joins them, and the four of them are on essentially a post-apocalyptic road trip. So this movie is just like any other post-apocalyptic movie, right? They're going on a road trip. So they go from place
to place. They just happen to be journalists.
It just happens to be journalists.
Got it.
So it goes from place to place to place. And an event happens at every place, right? Like they have to stop for a reason and then messed up situation happens. And then they go over here and another messed up situation happens. And it's basically them trying to get down to Washington. And that's the idea in the middle of the Civil War. And what I mean by what this movie is about is, I think a lot of people might go into this thinking like, we're going to learn how this war started as a cautionary tale for us. Like it's going to preach about politics, right, et cetera, et cetera. Taylor, not one second of that is in this movie.
So you we have no idea,
no clue why this war started. You kind of have a vague idea who is involved. So basically, they call themselves the Western Forces, which is Texas and California, are basically together, united, attacking what is left of the United States. But then there's also this third group that's like Florida, and they just call it and their allies. So there's also this other group. So basically, the rest of America is fighting a war on two fronts, but these two different sort of entities aren't really connected.
This is California and Texas have very little in common politically. So
that's why it's not really set in our political landscape. Like there's right. no Got it. There's a
and
couple,
they probably did that on purpose to not, you know, that's agitate right. during an election year, maybe. I don't know.
So the president of the United States is played by Nick Offerman. And there's a few small nods that make it seem like he's a Donald Trump type. Mm. Like that's sort of like the vibe I got. But again, nothing's explicit. I don't know if he's Republican or Democratic.
Right.
The words Republican and Democratic are never mentioned in this entire movie. Taylor, this movie is about Kirsten Dunst explaining to this young photojournalist how emotionally detached you have to be during war to get the shots you need. And the idea of journalism being more of a blank canvas, the idea of you have to just send pictures and write the story it is, and everyone else other than you is supposed to judge it. And you just try to give the truth and try to sort of explain. And that's what this movie's about.
So it's a rah-rah journalism movie.
Yes, Taylor, but hold on. they definitely don't glorify journalists.
Got it.
Kirsten Dunst comes off as a cold, cold, distant human being.
B-word.
Who basically, if someone's limb exploded in front of her, she would stop and take several pictures and not
help the person.
There are scenes where horrific things are happening to people, and she's got her camera up taking pictures. And it shows kind of the impact it has behind the scenes, But in the moment, she's cold and distant, whatever. And then you've got the counter, which is the young one trying to learn, who obviously gets rattled easier. And it's basically about that journey of these four people. And that, Taylor, that surprised me. I thought this was going to be more of a kind of
political
movie, political lens to it. This movie could have been set in any war-torn country anywhere in the world, and it wouldn't change. So their choice to set it in the U.S., I think that's the idea of like, okay, we want to tell a cautionary tale. We want to show these things. But they did the smart thing that you and I like, that we talk about. They don't beat you over the head with anything. They just tell this story.
I get that, but also, don't you want to know what more about the Civil War? You call the movie Civil War.
Interested. The movie title doesn't match what the movie is. So
I think they should have picked maybe like an actual world conflict. And then if they wanted, they could just not use names. Like, say, like, I think, like, the Bosnian War. You never mentioned it's the Bosnian War, but there's kind of evidence in the movie that it's the Bosnian War. But the movie is about the journalist. You know what I'm saying? Because then there's less, I wouldn't be, the whole movie, I'd be sitting there watching, like, okay, when are we going to find out what's going on with the war?
And there's a part of that that happens. If the title of the movie was different and you never saw any advertising.
They called it Snap instead of Scoop.
Something like, yeah, they call it Snap. Then this movie is really good in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because if you take that element out of it, the marketing, which the director doesn't control, but the title, which you do, and the fact that he clearly, especially in interviews, made the choice being like, no, like, I'm doing this because it's close to things that are happening now. I'm trying to, like, you know, do what art does, where you show a lens and you try to do things. But this movie's not about that, though.
Don't be a coward. He took the coward's way out.
There's no lesson to be learned here. But if you're just trying to tell a good story about photojournalism work, I learned a lot. And this movie is, like, gut-wrenching at times.
Sure.
And really, it shows you, like, wow, they have no emotional connection to what's going on. And that's powerful moments, which is interesting. But as you mentioned, Taylor, where the movie lost some things for me was, I have no sense on what's going on, why this needed to be set in the U.S., who's doing what the point of that was. And it just seemed to me a little bit too catering. Like, okay, I know what he's saying, but if I'm looking at this from without hearing a word from the director and knowing nothing and knowing the background I have in producing and marketing, I'd be looking at this being like, oh, you're taking advantage of
the political climate
to release a movie that you know will get butts in seats, but it's not about the thing you're talking about at all. Like, it's not for one second is this movie about that. You could tell this story with any backdrop you wanted. You're choosing this one for whatever reason. But I feel like it just didn't, for those reasons, it didn't quite hit for me. Because if I can forget the title of the movie, and if I can forget the kind of idea of the setting it, yeah, this is a pretty good movie. But with all that added on to it, yeah, that's where it started to lose a lot of points for me. Like, a lot of them.
Kirsten Dunst's husband, Jesse Plemons,
is in this.
And I read an article today that he was not supposed to be in the movie, but like the week of of rehearsals, the original actor had to bow out. And Kirsten said, well, why not just have Jesse do it?
So apparently he was like the last choice because no one wanted to do the role. Because of what the role was.
Is he a bad guy?
He's a piece of work in it.
Right.
But he's so good as an actor. He steals that scene. So you know how these kinds of road trip movies work, right? No matter who's in the movie, you get one scene.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to run into different
people. It's like
people,
vignettes.
Right?
It's vignettes. You're meeting people on the road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The only people who are throughout the whole thing are the four we're following, right? Everyone else is kind of, they come and go. So Jesse Plemons, like, it's not a spoiler to say he basically has one scene, because essentially everybody does. And he like, steals it. It's wild how good he is. His ability to dive into a role like that to make it work. Yeah, he was incredible. And the fact that he's a last minute addition and just was like, okay, I got to do this.
The article made really it literally crazy. Sound like he was just like, he was there with Kirsten.
He
like,
was on, yeah, he was visiting.
He was set, like visiting his wife. Yeah. And then she was like, well, why not Jesse? And Jesse was like, I'm not doing anything. Why not? That's like, why what the article made it seem like. So I'm glad. Yeah, I'm glad that it was really good because it could be the complete opposite where you're like, that was horrible. Why did they ever?
He's such a good actor.
He is good.
He's one of those actors that I actually would trust to do almost anything, even if he was given a role that I'm like, there's no way this doesn't fit or whatever. I'd be like, yeah, but
here's a controversial hot take, Mike, and it just came to mind, and I might be basing this because they kind of have similar looks. But I might be off my rocker. Is he our generation's Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yeah, I would say Philip Seymour Hoffman's done a lot more.
Longer career, obviously.
Yeah, and Jesse Plemons, I mean, he's done a lot of different things. I was about to say comedy is something that Philip Seymour Hoffman proved he could do both.
Right.
I think Jesse Plemons is only, there's only one comedy I've seen him in, which was Date Night. And he was brilliant in that too. I think that was the first time I've ever seen Jesse Plemons, was Date Night. And he plays the neighbor in that movie. And he's very funny in it. But he has, again, he's a very deadpan role.
Right.
But the humor and the comedy is huge. So, yeah, maybe. Because he can hop into anything. And Philip Seymour Hoffman was also that type of actor. You could throw him into any kind of movie. And Philip Seymour Hoffman made it work. So, yeah, maybe Jesse Plemons is that. I would say that's a good comparison. Yeah.
And we could add him to the actor's actor list.
He'd be on mine. Like, I know for a lot of people, like, he hasn't been in huge, huge movies, but he would be on mine because he's done enough for me, and I've seen him in a variety, like, enough of a variety that I would say, like, he's got acting chops. He's good. In terms of, like, rating this movie, it just doesn't quite get to the see it level for me. A lot of the reasons that I brought up and that you brought up, it just kind of de-elevated the film for me. And also, so Alex Garland, who's the director and writer, I think he's really gone downhill from his
what's his
work.
Other work that name's not ex, familiar
ex,
to me
Ex Machina.
Okay, yeah, yeah, I know that.
Annihilation,
one. Haven't seen that directed. One
Men, which is the one that his most recent one, right, which is the one with Jesse Buckley, which bombed, and now Civil War. Those are like his big four things. Now he did a movie a long way back called Sunshine that I also really enjoy.
Is he American?
I think so. I want to say he's American.
I only ask
I would
because...
say, because like his writing in Sunshine and his writing in Ex Machina were really, really good. Annihilation was okay. Men apparently wasn't very good. And then Civil War, like the writing was okay. But you could tell with this movie, the entire budget went to making sure it was practical and there were explosions and like the war elements that they did see worked. Like it's clear that's where the money went because it didn't go anywhere else. And I just feel like his work is not quite like Ex Machina is so incredible. I just feel like this movie just doesn't, yeah, kind of pales in comparison.
Mike, he's English.
He's English, huh?
So that's that also to me, I don't know, maybe he lives in America. I have no idea. It's not like you have to live in that country to write a story about it. But again, it just seems like, oh, I wanted the movie to be of the times. And yeah, it's like, you're not even
from. But again, like,
it just, I don't know.
He lives
just,
in America.
Who knows?
He would work a lot in America because sure, of Hollywood. And I get it. Like, I totally understand that lens. And that was the type of movie I thought I was getting. And again, I enjoyed this movie. I want that to be very clear. I enjoyed this movie. I'm giving it a stream it. I still think it was pretty good, but I just don't think it was a see it because, yeah, it wasn't the movie I expected. I thought the dialogue and the writing was like, okay, there were two or three moments in the movie that I'm like, okay, I think we can speed things up here. And then there were two, three moments where I'm like, that was powerful. That was really good. Hmm. And the ending of the movie is both equally powerful, but also really just like jarring that it just ended. Like it just sort of ends. It's
like that other
walk on set. Being like, let's go, we're done. You know, like, that's what it felt like.
That was, like, the other movie you watched, similar, where, you don't really know. It's that like global conflict and they're like harboring at that house.
That was a Netflix one.
Yeah, and you don't know if it's like nuclear war or whatever. And that movie just apparently, you said that one just ended.
Same thing. And like, so I think, so the arc of the film, without giving it away, which I won't, the in terms of the actual arc of the movie, yes, it comes to some kind of a conclusion. And the, and emotionally for the characters that we're emotionally following, there's also an arc for them. And those things end, so I understand it. But the moment they chose to end on was just a little bit like, oh, and we're done. So I get it. Like, the movie definitely concluded. Don't get me wrong. Like, I understand that. But I felt like it was still, like, a jarring editing-wise choice of what they did. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess we're done. Like, we really had to speed through this.
Here's a question for you. Is that bad writing or interesting directing choice?
I think it's a mix of both, because I mean, you certainly, your dialogue is done and probably your scene descriptions or whatever you're writing. When you're directing and writing in a combo, because I think he did both. I think he wrote and directed this.
I think, yeah, he typically does that.
I think you often, as a writer, from what I've heard, they will write very basic scene direction, but for the most part, they're just writing dialogue. And then because they know they're directing, they're going to work with their director of photography and like come up with all the things they need to. So I think it's probably a mix of the both, where he decided to end on this note and however they decided to end it. And again, emotional beats in the movie, I get it. They're done. Absolutely. But there's no like prologue, which you often see at the end of a movie. There's no like move forward point. There's no like, this is how we're going to sort of conclude things. It's just sort of ends.
That's a movie's got to end. A book's got to end. I do not envy anyone who has to write endings. I don't even like writing concluding paragraphs in the reports I write at work. So I get it. I just think, is this a new trend? Like, I'm thinking back to Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
And in a way, that movie kind of just ends with him like walking out of the, no, maybe there is that kind of a prologue scene where he's talking to his wife on the phone at, and they get to sleep. Yeah, I guess
that's kind of the, yeah, I guess that's.
That's kind of like a, the like,
yeah,
moving the action forward, kind of like putting it in a bow. But I don't, I don't know. That's three movies, two that you've recently reviewed, and then The Zone of Interest, where I'm like, are we just not good at ending movies anymore? Or is that like a stylistic choice to just kind of, but you're saying that emotionally it felt complete. So that's different. Right. That's different.
Yeah. And maybe in a couple weeks we can revisit this, so it's less spoilery, but we can talk about that. Okay. We're pretty much wrapped up, but quickly, just a note for everyone. We will not be having a new episode next week. My show that I'm directing goes into Tech Week. I'm doing Guys and Dolls in Ottawa, so that goes to Tech Week. If you're a CFRC listener, don't worry, you will get a rebroadcast. We've got a couple episodes that we can throw in there as a rebroadcast that I think you'll enjoy. But for podcast listeners, no new episode next week, but we will be back the week after. So don't worry about that as I dive into the world of Tech Week for theater for the first time in like 7-8 years. So we'll are off next week, and then you'll hear from us the week after. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Go see some movies.